Good afternoon, everybody. I'm going to be presenting on an overarching framework, first of all, that we've been using for about the past 15 years in states and communities, tribes and territories to assess, plan for, and develop strong integrated health systems. It's an outcome-focused framework. This particular one I'm going to talk about today is an external assessment. We also have an internal assessment process. It's very much focused on system science because what we have found is that the problems that everybody is facing today are not problems that are easily addressed by single sector interventions. And you know what? Let me go here and start here, because I need to tell you that I have received consulting fees by facilitating health systems assessments and planning processes in states, communities, and territories. But we got interested in the systems work years ago when we were really studying the phenomena of sort of syndemics. I don't know if that's a term that's familiar to everybody, but a concept of linked epidemics. I was working in public health in the early 90s, and some of the public health nurses talked about their clients as train wrecks, and that seemed like really disrespectful to me. I didn't know what they were meaning. And they said, well, you know, it's somebody presents for diabetes, but we take their case history, and they've got domestic violence, and they've got all kinds of issues that are going on in their lives, and it's like, You've seen some kind of a train wreck, and you're picking through the parts to try to put together the history of what happened so that you know how to intervene and how to best help them. So in our system assessment process, we really are looking outcome-oriented, and we're looking at what is the desired outcome that wants to be achieved. And based on that, we're looking at what are all of the parts of the system. You know, could be hospitals, could be medical providers, could be educational facilities, could be colleges. But in terms of that particular problem, what are all the parts of the system that need to be connected in order to address all of the complicated issues that make that problem present? How is that system able to adapt to change? Changes in leadership, changes in external factors, changes in priorities, changes in problems and consequences and the way that they manifest. And then what is the ability of that health system to maintain homeostasis? And by that we mean that when there are changes or there are external or even internal factors that impact that health system, to what degree are the members of that system able to sort of self-organize and move to sort of maintain equilibrium and balance? If a key partner loses funding or has a dramatic change in leadership that impacts how all of those partners of a system work together, to what degree is that system able to maintain equilibrium and not sort of go backwards in movement? So over the years, we've developed a relatively small number of indicators that we use to go in and assess the degree to which we find strengths within that system, key challenges within that system, and then recommendations for moving forward. And what we have found, I guess the bottom line for us, is that we found that when there is a strong health system in place and the right partners are there, and people are coordinating efforts, and they are able to adapt to change, and they are able to mitigate the impact of influences, they're actually able to achieve health outcomes in a relatively small amount of time. We were doing an all-day learning session yesterday, and we were producing, showing some of the evaluation results. But as a community example, we worked for several years in Flint, Michigan. Their particular outcome, they were focused, they had so many issues, they felt overwhelmed, and they didn't know really where to start. But they started with a place that they thought they might have an impact, which was one simple problem. They were the second highest in the state for alcohol-related fatal traffic deaths. And they thought by putting the correct partnerships in place and really diagnosing that issue, they could have maybe they wanted a 10% reduction in 4 years, and the number of deaths. It took them 2 years to do the systems development piece, where they had the right partners at the table, which included law enforcement, as well as the health care facilities, as well, multiple, let me tell you, multiple law enforcement jurisdictions who were often competing and didn't work well. But the end shot was that they reduced alcohol-related traffic crash deaths by 40% in 1 year. And because of this endemic nature of things, that epidemics and problems tend to be linked, when they went in and began addressing some of the issues, high on that list was retail alcohol outlets that were selling alcohol illegally to people past the point of intoxication, which is illegal to do. They found, not surprisingly, those same outlets were engaged in illegal arms sales, drug trafficking, health code violations. And so they kind of interrupted a whole system, a whole syndemic of problems that were interrelated, and had that unintended, really nice consequence that of that significant reduction of crime in one of the most dangerous cities in America. So that keeps us excited about doing that work, doing this work. So the first thing that we will look at when we go into a system, and that system could be an agency, or it could be and it could be an agency at any level, or it could be a collection of agencies that are working together. We'll look at their structure. We want to know, do they have a clear vision and mission? That's bottom line, because if you don't really have a collective and shared vision and mission, it's really hard to get anything to make a difference. We'll look at conceptual clarity, and the more partners there are there, the more important that piece is. And what we mean is there a common language? Are people using the same words to mean the same thing so that their discussions and planning together is meaningful? We'll look at their theoretical and operational frameworks. What's the science that guides their work? Are there clear operating procedures? And everybody knows what those are within the system and shares those and abides by them. And we'll kind of look at the structure. I mean, if we go into some places, and there's a whole lot of infrastructure that's accrued over time, and some of it's not even really used, and nobody really knows why it's there. And other sort of systems might be kind of small and compact, but remote and hard to reach, kind of inaccessible and maybe out of touch sometimes. So these are areas that we look at. We pay close attention to the contextual conditions in which that system operates. What are the demographics? Are there is the population aging? Are there rapid new influxes of immigrants and refugees? What's the socioeconomic characteristics? The geography, is it hard to get to people? Are there people that are geographically remote? What's the political environment, and what is the policy environment in which it operates? So we think those are all really key considerations. We'll look at what's going on with regard to health. What are the trends? We'll pay close attention to what's moving in positive directions and what are some disturbing or concerning movements in terms of health trends, particularly the health areas that system is really charged with. We will look at their data infrastructure, their needs assessment, the degree to which they've got the data infrastructure in place to even really thoroughly diagnose what those priority problems are, what the consequences are that the population is experiencing, risk behaviors, and also intervening variables. And that's a really important one that we frequently find that the health systems we're working with may not be paying attention to it too. But for us, the intervening variables are the sweet spot of problem solving, because you may use a different word for that. You may say intermediate variables, you may say risk and protective factors, but what exists in the environment or within people or within that cultural context that is causing problems to occur in the first place? Because the only way to solve a problem is to understand why it's occurring and then address those issues. So we'll look at, are there critical data gaps that they don't have data on? What's the validity of the needs assessment by the processes that they're using? Is it representative? Does it give them good data? Sometimes we see people using convenience samples and then trying to do planning around a convenience sample that's not representative of the population. And we look at the priority populations. You know, are they being reached? Workforce, these are the main categories that we look at, and I'm just quickly going through for you what we're looking at. In terms of the problem and what the problem is, has that system identified what the core competencies are that the workforce needs, and frequently find that they haven't. They may be working off a competency framework that hasn't been updated in years, and we know that problems change quickly. And so is there a current identification of what the workforce really even needs to know, particularly with regard to the unique characteristics of the problems in that environment? You know, we know that problems may be very different in one part of the country or one state than another. So is the workforce not only have maybe internationally or nationally recognized core competencies, but core competencies pertinent to the environment in which they're working? We'll look at, is there a current assessment of the workforce based on core competencies that is proactively driving training and technical assistance? And frequently find, again, that it's not, that training in TA may be reactive. It may be based upon self-identified need. It may be based upon just kind of, this is the schedule of what we provide when we provide it. And what we always say is sometimes people don't know what they don't know. We will also look at the capacity of that health system to secure or provide intensive technical assistance, because what we found is that training alone is rarely sufficient to address and make significant change in these complex problems that we face within the health system world. And we'll look at, finally, we'll look at organizational capacity. So in workforce, we might be looking at the individual sort of knowledge, skills, and abilities, and then in this, we're also looking at organizational capacity in terms of organizational knowledge, skills, and abilities. We'll look at the degree to which that system is engaged in strategic planning, that they have clear goals and objectives and outcomes that drive their work, that any strategies and activities that they're doing are based directly back, reflecting those goals and objectives and activities, and the degree to which they are planning for how they're going to implement and evaluate those strategic plans. We see a lot of strategic plans that have a lot of words and a lot of strategies that never really get implemented, but take a lot of energy and effort and kind of wear people out. And then we really focus on implementation and operations. So based upon everything that we've looked at, the contextual conditions of that health system and the health trends that's going on and what we know, to what degree is implementation actually allocating funding in a way that's addressing those priority issues? So we'll look very closely at budgeting and funding, how much resource is available to that system. What's the process by which they allocate resources? Is it historical? Frequently we find it may be historical based on past processes as opposed to needs-driven. We will look at where are they spending money? Is it in alignment? Does it reflect what the data shows about what's happening to the populations that they serve? And we'll look at what do they require of their providers? Do they require that the providers collect and use needs assessment data to develop plans that are addressing priority problems impacting priority populations? We will look at the scope and the reach of services. This is just an example graph out of an analysis we'll do. We'll see, you know, individual level strategies versus population level, what age ranges. Does this match up to what the data says about the people that are experiencing the problem that the health system is focusing on? And we'll look at where they're spending their money. What's the allocation? Does that seem to fit with what their needs assessment says? And then we'll look at to what degree is that health system able to monitor and evaluate its providers or subrecipients? To what degree is it able to collect process data about what it's doing to monitor whether strategies and activities are being implemented as planned? And to what degree are they able to use outcome data to know whether they need to change what they're doing? That they need to maybe step back and think if they're not getting to that specific health outcome. To what degree, finally, are they able to implement the return on investment of the funding that they're distributing to address particular problems? And we'll look at the policy environment. You know, what's going on? One of the things we're looking at in a lot of states right now is decriminalization, legalization of marijuana, legalization of medicinal marijuana. There's other areas where there are significant kind of policy shifts and it's having impacts on health systems at all levels. So, you know, what's going on there in terms of formal and informal policies? I'm going to skip through that. And in the end of that, what we're really looking for is what is the, what are the priority areas? Out of all of these areas we look for, where is the one or two most significant places where a little bit of effort and a little bit of perhaps technical assistance could have the most positive effect in rippling change out across that system? We'll typically come out with a dozen or two dozen perhaps areas for potential system enhancement, but the bottom line is, where is the one most significant place to start?